You're tuned to Focused on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focused on Campus, and joining us today is Dr. Jonna Perillo, and she is an assistant professor in the Department of English here on campus, but recently she has had published her book, Uncivil Rights, Teachers, Unions, and Race in the Battle for School Equity. And this is the University of Chicago Press. This is a prestigious press, and so we're very fortunate to have her with us here today. And she's also going to be presenting later on in the month, and we'll talk a little bit about that in just a bit. But first of all, Dr. Perillo, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Well, thanks, Louie. Thanks for that generous introduction.
Now, tell us a little bit about this book that you wrote. The title is, of course, is intriguing, and you know what we're talking about. And there's been so many issues recently with school districts, with the teachers in Chicago. And tell us a little bit about this book and what got you interested as far as going this way.
Sure. What really interests me is concepts of teacher professionalization. And I'm particularly interested in how teachers collaborate to think about ideas relating to professionalism. So when I started this book, I actually wasn't particularly interested in unions, but what Union Archives offered me was a body of research by which I could look at a lot of teachers' thinkings about issues of the profession over time, because I'm also a trained education historian, and I really like looking at things in terms of a wider view, but also in terms of looking at a large group of teachers. And this book focuses on New York City unionized teachers. It's the largest teacher union in the country, and it almost always has been. So that was what I set out to do in the book. And I was interested in issues of race and how race intersected with teacher professionalism, both because it's obviously one of the most important things I think we need to think about with public schooling today, and out of my own experience as a student who grew up in urban public schools and who later taught in urban public schools in Chicago. So that was my big frame as I was going into the project. I started looking at the 1930s because that's when something really interesting happens with New York City teachers. They had a union that had only been around for about 20 years, and they split in half. And a lot of the time that split is typically understood as a sort of communist social democratic split, so two different political orientations. But I was really interested more specifically in how issues of race came to divide teachers, and specifically teaching in Harlem schools.
As far as union goes, you know, it's of course we live and work in a right to work state, and the problem that has arisen is in some areas is the fact the word union. Some people see it as a negative word. You know, it's not good. Other people say, well, if it wasn't for the union, I wouldn't have gotten that raise or those benefits. And of course, my father was a union member when he was a worker before he retired. But tell us a little bit about what do you think or what would you say to people who said, well, if it wasn't for those teachers' unions, we wouldn't have had that strike in Chicago, because I heard that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in terms of unions, they bring up a lot of divided feelings, I think, for Americans and for teachers. And one of the things that I think about in this book is why teacher unions only became the kind of institutions that we now think of them as with the civil rights movement. Because one of the biggest resistors of teacher unions for a long time was teachers. The kinds of images that I think unions evoke of laborers, of bread and butter issues, just didn't sit well with a lot of teachers. That's not how they thought of themselves. They thought of themselves as oftentimes the first professionals in their family. So they were really hesitant to join unions for a long, long time. And I explain why that changes and how that changes with the civil rights movement. But one of the things I think was so interesting about the Chicago strikes, and something I think is important for us to realize, is that those issues of salary were on the table and they were quickly taken off the table. They were negotiated very, very quickly, very easily. That wasn't really what that strike was about. The strike was about issues of privatization of education, of teacher evaluations and the role of standardized testing in teacher evaluations, and really of what teachers often see as the unfair treatment of students in urban public schools. So that's what I think was really different about this strike than some of the strikes that I write about in my book. Although I will say also that I don't really talk about salary or benefit issues in the book at all. What I try to do is to think about how issues of teacher quality and school equity have actually been on union agendas since the 1930s.
Now, living here in the Southwest, and I don't remember what you said as far as how long you've been here.
7 years.
Okay, 7 years. So you are familiar with our school system and the recent issues that have come up as far as corruption and superintendents. And because of that, the schools been targeted, like Bowie, Jefferson. People start questioning about equity and why is it that, you know, the poor schools are the ones who are getting cheated, getting rerouted, and the good schools are the ones who get rewarded for other things.
Right. One of the things that No Child Left Behind was supposed to do, and that I think it did do, was provide more funding to some of those schools. But there are a lot of inequities between schools that are well off and schools that aren't, that go far beyond money. Schools with high number of low-income and minority students are most likely to have teacher turnover, to have a high number of novice teachers, to have a lack of resources, including like planning time, you know, not just resources in terms of material objects, but in terms of the other kinds of things that teachers need to do their jobs well. And those really haven't changed. They haven't changed with legislation. And in fact, a lot of the ways in which legislation has worked and the pressure that's put on teachers has made their job, I think, worse, more challenging. And it's become a liability in a lot of ways to teach struggling students who need good teachers the most.
One of the things that has been brought up, especially here in Texas, is the fact that because of the student testing that the teachers have to focus on, that has taken away their actual right, privilege to teach and to use the skills to the best of their ability, because all of a sudden they've become like robots where they have to focus in on these tests and they have to score high or else they'll be gone.
Right. There's this really great book by Linda Perlstein called Tested that I was reading as I was writing my own book and just thinking about the ways in which teachers at struggling schools are under a fundamentally different kind of pressure than teachers who are at schools with high-performing students. Yeah, it's absolutely right. The testing, I think, has made the profession less professional. It's made it less desirable. And now we're starting to look at a generation of new teachers who themselves went to high school under this regime, for lack of a better word. And it remains to be seen how this is going to play out. But I think a lot of new teachers go into the profession not really knowing often what to do if those tests disappeared.
As far as ethnic issues go, do you talk about or discuss in your book about the diversity in teachers? Are there more minority teachers than we have had before?
There are. And that's actually a really important part of my book is even in New York City, until very recently, we're looking at a largely white teaching force that by World War II was teaching largely a population of color. And this has a huge impact on the way in which parents and teachers interact and the way in which administrators and teachers interact and the way in which teachers see the profession changing. One of the biggest strikes, the strike that I think if anyone knows about a teacher strike, they know about the 1968 strike in New York City that shut down the schools for 3 months. And that was a strike that was in many ways about race. And it was about a population of white teachers who had trained when schools were still majority white, and suddenly they weren't. And it was about African-American parents especially trying to gain a better say in schools and in what they had seen going wrong in their children's education for many, many decades.
It used to be, and when you read books like A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, Upton Sinclair's The Jungle. The teacher plays an important role in the child's life because they want to be like the teacher, or they see the teacher and how successful she is, because in most of the novels like that, the teacher is female. Because of what's happened here recently with the corruption that I mentioned earlier, and the fact that some of these students who were looking up to these teachers and administrators as mentors, and they feel like they're let down, what does that do to the teacher student relation that, as I mentioned, once was, it was great, you know, if your teacher said so, you respected your teacher, you wanted to be just like your teacher, and now all of a sudden, you know, they find out that these people have let them down.
Well, you know, I don't know if, I think that our culture respects teachers less than they used to. Although seeing Chicago actually heartened me a lot, seeing the sort of public and parental support for Chicago teachers. And by the way, just to say something about the last question you asked, I think it's really important to recognize that Karen Lewis is an African-American woman. And we saw a lot of teachers of color on the lines, on the picket lines. And that's not something we saw when Albert Shanker was union president. And that's not so much about unionized teachers as much as it is about the changing teaching force. But
I'm sorry,
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, because you said as far as the there's not as much respect as there used to be for teachers, there's also not as much, you know, you talked earlier that the salary was not an issue as far as this in your book and the strike. And in most instances, you talk, when people think of union, they think of salary. They think of benefits. And we're starting to see that here are these people who strive to work with the children. They work after hours grading papers. They spend time with children who need special attention. Yet they are still making less than some of the blue-collar union members.
They are, and it's so different by locality. But I do think something that's important to remember is, so yes, I think our culture respects teachers less. And I think a lot of the legislation and privatization of education has contributed to that. But studies show that parents don't necessarily respect their children's teachers less, and children don't respect their teachers less. And, you know, some of the quotes by teachers, I mean, I'm sorry, by students in my class in the 1930s, if a student said some of these things to me, I feel like I would just fall on the floor and want to disappear. So I think we have this image that students now are lower performing or less respectful or more difficult in the classroom. And in fact, you know, you look at the writing from teachers from any period and it's just not so. So I think we're talking about a difference between the individual relationships between students, parents, and teachers, and a cultural relationship that we have to teachers. And that a lot of what we've seen from the Clinton administration on has done a lot to deprofessionalize teachers, to create public skepticism towards them as a professional force, and to question their abilities. But people don't necessarily feel that way about the individuals that they know.
And you mentioned, you know, that sometimes the students don't care, or the parents. And that's very much the case, because when you have these open parent-teacher meetings, the parents rarely go. They rarely help the students. And I'm not saying this all the time, but you see a lot of instances about that. But also the teachers are being put through so much stress now. It's not just about teaching. It's about, as you said, putting up with a student who is hard to put up with. And you have to be careful because of lawsuits. You know, you can't say this to a child. You can't do this, can't do that. Then all the incidents that have happened within the last few years with the shootings and the violence and all that stuff that's been going on in schools, teachers have very stressful jobs.
They do have very stressful jobs. They absolutely do. One of the things I think is so interesting about training teachers and working with teachers here in El Paso is it's such a different model from what I was talking about in New York. which is to say we have a lot more Mexican-American teachers teaching Mexican-American students. We have a lot more teachers who, you know, come from the same community and very similar backgrounds as a lot of their students. And what's so fascinating to me is that they so often voice the same very frustrations that you're talking about, that that sometimes they wish they could talk to parents, that they had more involvement in with parents, and those kinds of challenges that are true, I think, teaching anywhere. But I think a real advantage that we have here is that teachers are committed to the community from which their students come, and that they've often found solutions to overcoming those barriers. I'm thinking, for example, of teachers that I worked with several years ago who developed a family literacy program in their school and really had a way of reaching out to parents that that in other communities might not be as easy because they speak Spanish, you know, and they literally can communicate with those parents because they understand students in a way that I think the teachers that I'm writing about in my book just didn't understand. They were coming from two disparate backgrounds, and the structures weren't set up for them to really get to know each other very well or to create a whole lot of understanding between the two.
Now, getting back to your book, you are going to be presenting October 23rd, I believe you said, here on campus. Tell us about that.
I'm giving a talk that will be about my book. That's about as specific as I can get right now. It'll be October 23rd at the Blumberg Room at the UTEP Library. It's open to the public. I would absolutely love to see teachers there, teachers of any subject. And it's open just to the public as well as to faculty and students, of course.
And what time is that?
It'll be at 7 o'clock at the UTEP Library. Tuesday, October 23rd.
Okay. Once again, we've been speaking with Dr. Jana Perillo. She is the author of Uncivil Rights, Teachers, Unions, and Race in the Battle for School Equity, published by the University of Chicago Press. And she will be giving a talk on this book on October 23rd, and that will be at 7 o'clock. Thank you very much for being with us here today.
Thank you, Louis.
We've been visiting with Dr. Jana Perillo, Assistant Professor in the Department of English. Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Rule. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.